Let's cool off with a Future Tuesday on AM 1080, KSCO 104.1 FM, and KSCO.com.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, happy Future Tuesday, everyone. My goodness, what a warm day today.
Sweltering.
101, you say, in Boulder Creek?
Yeah,
it was 103. Yeah, that's more like it, because when I got in my car on the way here, it was, the car said 118, but that was sitting in the sun.
A real sizzler.
Yeah.
All right.
But down here, it's kind of nice, down by the beach.
Yes.
Yeah, almost civilized.
Everything's better by the water.
Yeah. So, we got quite a show for you today. We do have a couple of guests for the second hour calling in, as no one's allowed in the studio.
That's right. COVID consciousness. Keep our germs to ourselves.
You've heard of the folks who are trying to open the beaches before they're officially
supposed
to.
You mean like, I was thinking maybe you were talking about Gavin Newsom trying to open the beaches.
Well,
show the way.
I think more locally it's...
No, tonight they're going to make a new announcement about the acceleration of the reopening.
But for the last month, there have been a couple of folks who have been trying to open up business sooner.
Right, yes.
And they've been branded as virus deniers and...
Well, like so many things in our country right now, people are, they're on their side and they want to shout down the other side rather than engage in a constructive conversation where we all get smarter.
Yes. So we'll have David Gonzalez and Howard Lichtman on in the second hour.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to try to focus on other stuff for this hour because other things are going on.
That's right. That's right.
You know, thank goodness.
Right. The world is shifting under our feet, but some things are still worth looking up for.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Like, I'm sure all of you have heard this in the news about how it's happening, that SpaceX's first crewed spaceflight can launch tomorrow.
Tomorrow's the big day.
Right?
NASA returns to space. Americans have a rocket that'll get up to the space station, we hope, as long as it all goes well.
All goes well, yes.
Now, we do have to acknowledge that NASA's head of manned space flights just departed his post last week. So
yes, but he had only been there for a short period of time.
He was a new guy, huh?
Yeah,
okay.
Relatively speaking.
Uh-huh.
So the top officials are at NASA at this Kennedy Space Center right now in Florida for the final checks of the Crew Dragon space capsule.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a bathroom on board, in case you're wondering.
Oh, boy.
This spaceship
spacious.
Is first class.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Great. Well, that's going to give a whole new meaning to the Mile High Club, isn't it?
Oh, launch pad 39A at 4:33 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time.
Okay, 4:33 Eastern Daylight Time tomorrow. So right around 1:33 tomorrow, we'll be tuning in to some live webcast, I hope.
And the two astronauts, Becken and Hurley, have been in strict quarantine since May 13th before the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Because
that was the middle of it. But 2 weeks. See, two weeks is a reasonable quarantine. 2 years is not.
Well, they said their actual isolation began as far back as mid-March.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's when ours began.
And they've been tested twice so far for the virus.
Right.
And they might be tested again before they go.
Great. Maybe they'll get some inoculations. Maybe somebody will hit them up with one of these new experimental vaccines that give them a fighting chance to not contract it in space.
Unlikely, Mrs. Future. I obviously do not have a firm grasp of these concepts. But it's all right. It's all right.
I'm just saying, if it works, it works.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's all we need is a novel virus and the space station. Set the tone for the future.
Well, just the vaccination or just the antibodies. I'm not saying
just the antibodies,
send the
please.
Virus.
Okay.
Just the antibodies.
All right.
Yeah. The cure. Just the remedy, not the cause.
Right. Okay. Anyway, I told you we're not going to talk about the virus this hour.
I'm talking about the space station.
Okay. All right. Let's go back. NASA has awarded contracts worth $3.1 billion to SpaceX. and $4.9 billion to Boeing to create a competitive spacecraft.
Hmm. Right. Yeah. Wasn't Boeing's proposal a really good solution and it didn't get chosen because they had to come up with too many expensive new parts?
And multiple problems.
Mm-hmm.
The original target, for example, was 2015.
The original? Yeah, when was that target?
Into space. The original.
Before Columbia blew up?
And these guys have been training 5 years on the Crew Dragon capsule.
Mm-hmm.
Big difference from what we've seen in the Apollo capsules in the past, in the 60s, with all those toggle switches.
Besides the bathroom?
Touchscreens. Lots of touchscreens. Oh. Lots of glass.
Oh, okay. Great.
And it's got an emergency escape system, should there be a problem, after liftoff.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the mission, which is expected to last several months, the Crew Dragon will splash down, like the Apollo capsules did, with four ginormous parachutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Both SpaceX and Boeing are asked to carry out 6 voyages over the next few years. So if this Crew Dragon mission works out, it's successful, it'll be the first private company ever to deliver astronauts to the ISS.
Oh, boy.
As far as we know.
Governments better watch out.
Funny name, Demo One, huh?
Demo One.
Yeah.
Right. We're going to show you how it's done.
So as I mentioned, Boeing had conducted several uncrewed test flights of their capsule, but it has suffered many glitches.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S.-Russian cooperation, which is not expected to end with this, will continue, and NASA plans to use the Russian Soyuz rockets to send more astronauts into space as well as this one.
Sure, the end is near.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and SpaceX will also be providing flights for non-American astronauts. And SpaceX wants to send tourists to space as well. They're going to have some seating for tourism on there.
Do you have to get a passport?
I don't think there's anybody on the other end that would have a...
Nobody checking it?
Yeah. I don't think there's any passports for the moon or for space yet. I'm sure it's just a matter of time.
Don't need your driver's license even. You can just show up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like the Wild West.
You know, just a horse with no name.
Yeah, if you can get there, you belong. So there's some other interesting stories about this.
Can you tell them in 30 seconds?
Oh, no. No.
Oh.
So can we go to a break then?
Let's go to a break.
Yeah.
All right. Dr. Future Show. We're going to be right back.
Welcome back to the show. Yes, a couple other things about this historic space flight that's about to happen. The U.S. Space Force, you heard of them?
I have. Didn't they get invented by our current president?
Yes.
Isn't that the Space Force, the new branch of the military that's actually a part of the old military?
That's right. They have a role in this private space launch of U.S. astronauts as well.
What's their role?
Well, they are planning to be there in the event that it needs to be rescued. You know, if something goes wrong.
The Space Force will rescue a bad flight from the Crew Dragon.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. They,
okay.
They have the 45th Space Wing at the Patrick Air Force Base in Florida, just south of the NASA Kennedy Space Center.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be responsible for rescuing astronauts from abort scenarios.
Oh, okay. Well, let's hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah. Hopefully it won't happen.
Right.
But they're there, just in case.
Okay.
That's something to hopefully not use. So we have a very interesting article on all the details of how they would actually rescue them and stabilize the spacecraft in the water and pull the astronauts out and all that good stuff. So pretty interesting. There's a lot riding on this launch, you know. It's not a trivial thing. The stakes are high. The successful mission will begin a new era of space exploration for us. It'll show that we can take space exploration out of the hands of just governments and the public
sector. Prove once and for all that the private sector is way better at everything than the government, including space.
I wouldn't say that. I would say the government pays a lot of the R&D, a lot of the basic research. But once they've sort of greased the wheel, so to speak, then it's easier for private enterprise to do things there.
Sure.
It's like, you know, it was easier for business once we had a road system
interstate system to allow goods and services to be delivered. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with space. We need an infrastructure for stuff to move around and for people to move around.
Right. Well, and it used to be that government was bigger than business. Now we know business is bigger than government.
Yeah.
Too big to fail.
Well, there we seem to have a deep connection between the two.
Mm-hmm.
So all of this came out of the $100 million from Musk's PayPal payout.
What?
I mean, he all his money and all these projects.
Oh, all of these projects was him reinvesting his
PayPal payout.
His millions, right?
Yeah, $100 million back in 2002.
There you go. Well, it just goes to show you, if you want to be successful, the first thing you have to do is reinvent money.
It seemed to be a piece to it. Who would have thunk, huh?
Really paved the way. He was still an outsider for a long time. He really had to prove himself, show his chops.
Now, SpaceX alone is now considered to be worth $36 billion
as a
private company.
Their stock went up a lot in the last 6 months, doubled.
And NASA has shifted its priorities and is now working with private enterprise more than ever, certainly. Shifting the whole idea of how space will be explored. And I hate to use the word colonized.
Colonized, definitely. Yes, what drives a lot of these adventurous people is the idea that our heritage or our destiny is to be a multi-planetary civilization.
Yeah, multi-planet civilization, right?
Yes.
So that we don't end up like the dinosaurs, where one asteroid can take us out.
That's right. It would take a lot more asteroids if we inhabited every habitable planet or satellite in our solar system.
That's right. That's right. And that reminds me, I was just reading, I think I put it in our links page, that there's a group of scientists that have taken what happened in off the coast of Mexico, the giant asteroid that destroyed the dinosaurs 66 million years ago, and have do a simulation of exactly what happened in detail.
What's that one called? Tuscan?
The Chicxulub crater, I think it was.
Chicxulub.
I'm not sure I put it in our links page, but anyway, I thought I will.
So there's a great simulation of an asteroid taking out the dinosaurs?
Dinosaur asteroid hit. And they've redone it in great simulation that wiped out the dinosaurs, and it hit at a very deadly angle. Or the asteroid, it wasn't straight down like they originally thought, but it came in at an angle.
So it fried
66 million years ago, doomed the dinosaurs. It came from the northeast at a steep angle, which maximized the amount of climate-changing gases unleashed in the atmosphere.
Mm.
It's the equivalent of 10 billion Hiroshima bombs.
Whoa.
10 billion.
Well, bad news for dinosaurs.
Yeah, and most of life on the planet.
Good news for mammals.
Triggering off a mass planetary extinction.
Yeah, but if you look at the outcome, here we are today. So nature didn't kill us then. I'd say she's not trying that hard anymore. We have a fighting chance.
It's not nearly as bad now as 10 billion nuclear bombs, that's for sure.
That's right. And there were no diabolical humans planning that one.
As far as we know. Unless some time travelers set it up so that we would arise from the chaotic reorganization of life forms.
Sure, our future time travelers went to the distant past to seed our evolution.
We did a simulation of the future. In order to have a sentient life form, especially from the monkeys, we need to extinct the dinosaurs. How do we do that? Well, it has straight hit. Oh, of course. What angle? And where? Yeah, so a very interesting article on that. I'll put that in our links page as well.
Okay.
But it's fascinating because it's showing you how big events have happened in the past that just dwarf what we think is really important today.
Yeah, boy. COVID is going to be long gone before there's another extinction-level asteroid.
Yeah. Yeah, 10 billion nuclear weapons. Oh, my God. It's like, reminds me, Earth cracks in half, details at 11. Yeah. That's a simulation I'm looking forward to seeing. I'm waiting for them to publish some pictures of that.
Nice. Boy, simulations. We're going to have some interesting news about simulations from the AWE conference in the next half hour.
Yeah, we'll
right
have,
after the break.
Greg Panos calling in at 2:30 to tell us about Augmented World Expo, which is coming up. I just registered last night myself. I can't look forward to telling you about that.
Yes, it's happening. It started today. Of course, we don't have time today, but we'll tune in tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a few minutes.
Yeah.
For sure.
Meanwhile.
Yes, as you probably have managed that during this whole crisis, we have new forms of virtual reality that are emerging, some of which will be discussed at AHA. And one of the ones that I wanted to mention before that is folks who have been researching the National Center for Biological Sciences in Bangalore, a virtual reality arena where they can observe the behavior of flies, tethered flies, in great detail, and then simulate them in virtual reality.
What is a tethered fly? Is that like a fly that's been harnessed?
Yeah.
It's
on a leash.
It's on a leash.
Yeah.
It's pulling a cart or something.
Well, this is very important because, you know, if you ever tried to swat a fly, you know how hard it is to hit it. And they're studying.
Well, it depends on how old you are. Like, if you're slow.
What is their little fly brain doing to be able to avoid being hit?
Right. How does it know your thoughts before you do?
Ducks and weaves around. So the scientists are trying to understand this process and working hard on it. And rather than attempt the almost impossible task of trying to actually follow a fly around, they decided to just simulate the fly, look at their behavior and try to simulate them and look at a complex naturalistic 3D environment in which the insects navigate and see how they work, you know, to see if the simulation can teach us more about the fly.
And so what did you take away from this simulation of the fly's eye world?
Well, you know, details like you want to look at how a fly or in some cases, mosquitoes. Mosquitoes are a big life form to study. How do they seek us out and locate us? What's the mechanism? How do they make choices? What are their sensors? Are they smelling blood? Are they heat sensors? Are they using their eyes? How do they know where to land on you? How do they know how to stay there and not get swatted? What are they looking for when you're about to swat them? Do they detect shadow detection? Are they their eyes? Are they looking at motion of your hand? What's going on? How does it work?
Okay.
It's, you know, when you
you've given this a lot of thought, Dr. Future.
Well, when you look at anything deeply, you see it gets very complex. There's a lot going on, even on the simplest levels of universe. So insects are big, and our computers are just getting sophisticated enough to simulate insect behavior.
Yeah. You've got bandwidth to burn.
Put yourself in the brain of a fly and see what the world looks like. Mm. You know, the other thing is that the eyes are different than human eyes. So are they a continuous motion like we have, or is it more like a bad movie with only, 10 frames per second? You know, flicker fusion. Maybe they don't need that great eye. Those are all the details that our scientists are just fascinated with and trying to figure
out. Virtual reality is opening up brand new worlds for us, starting with fly brains.
Yeah, so you'd be able to actually fly in the body of a mosquito or a fly and see what that world looks like. Compound eyes are obviously different than ours. Remember War of the Worlds, the original film in the 1950s, where they had Caltech engineers try to analyze the eye of the alien? It was really weird. So it's that sort of thing. Insects are like aliens, okay, compared to what we're used to. This is their normal, shall we say. Not our normal, but thanks to our technology, we're able to simulate their normal and experience it ourselves and understand more about who they are and what they're experiencing.
Simulation is just on the rise, especially now that so many people are making their living through the screen online. The invented computer universe is becoming the new world in which we inhabit.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And one other thing on this line is the lickable screen. Right? The lickable screen.
A lot of people have been waiting for that one.
I know.
Huh?
Anyway, I'll tell you more.
A real lifesaver.
But rather than get into that, I also want to make sure that our audience knows that Bobby Wilder's on the line here as well. He's going to help. Bobby, I think you're there, right?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
I hear you. Yeah. Good. Welcome to the show.
Oh, good. Yeah. Lickable screen. That was amazing.
All right. Well, tell everybody about it. Thanks. We got about half a minute here before we go to our next break.
Well, it artificially recreates a flavor by triggering off the five different tastes on your tongue. And how does it do that, you know? It was inspired by how easily our eyes could be tricked into seeing something that technically doesn't exist.
I'm fascinated by the idea that you can use your tongue as a screen, a way of sensing the experience being fed to you by the computer. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, with copper foil and sodium. Hydrogen ions, magnesium ions, can play with taste. Pretty cool.
Wow.
Yeah. So we have a link on that. We want to know more about that at drfutureshow.com/links. And we're going to break. We'll be back. We're going to get Greg Panis on the line to talk about AWE for a few minutes. Great. And we'll see you in a minute. Okay, welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. We have Greg Panis on the line to talk to us about AWE, Augmented World Expo, usually a big techie event happening now, but it's now different thanks
to the virus. It's gone virtual.
And Greg's going to tell us all about it. Greg, you there?
Yeah, hi, everybody. Can you hear me?
Can we hear you? Yeah.
Great. Yeah. So, yeah, I had to forego my pilgrimage to Silicon Valley due to the COVID concerns. But AWE, which is a conference that you guys have been invited to in the past, which shows the latest augmented and virtual reality and spatial mapping and spatial computing and all the other great technologies that are evolving to titillate us and to entertain us and distract us, is a wonderful world showcase at this event. And they've gone online and they have all their sessions online. It's today through Friday, and each day there's multiple sessions. I've watched about six or seven of them today already.
Ah, okay. Now, is it a commercial event, or is it, can you go and just watch it? Do you have to pay money for it, or how does that work?
Yeah, well, ordinarily you have to pay money for it, but we have a special code for Dr. Future listeners.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And for them, it'll be complimentary. We'll give you the code towards the end of our little segment here.
Okay.
So everybody, keep their ears peeled. The best thing you can do initially is to go to the website, which is AWEXR.com.
Uh-huh.
So that's Alfred William Edward X. R.com. And that's where you'll be able to sign up and use the code. And you can go preview all of the items on the agenda of various talks that are being had there.
Yeah, I like their logo. It looks like the time tunnel from the 60s, you know.
Yeah.
It says, it's time to go spatial.
Right. So I watched the session this morning on volumetric capture.
Oh.
And I just saw another session on 3D scanning. Mm-hmm. There's so many more that are coming. The immersive web. A number of the talks are in various virtual environments where you can go in if you have a VR system and watch the talk in there and be part of the audience and wander around.
For the uninitiated, this is like going into a place rather than just watching a video.
Yeah, it's telepresence. It's called telepresence.
And you need your handy-dandy VR headset to get in.
Yeah, well, some of them are, you can use a web browser in 2D and just navigate around with the arrow keys and move around. You have a sense of movement and presence, but it's not immersive.
Right.
As if you had a head visor on where you look all around and everybody's around you.
Hmm.
Which is really kind of cool.
I have to say, just looking over at the website, I have never seen so many speakers at an event. And I guess this is what's happening is, since there isn't an in-person component, everybody who's presenting is listed online. So you could just expand it infinitely.
Yeah, absolutely. So there was a session on scent in VR and AR, unlocking the virtual world of immersion of the senses. There's a number of sessions for tool builders and people that want to get into building applications and understanding this new medium of immersive technology that's wearable technology. So, Alan, you and I talked a little bit about the Apple eyeglasses that are coming.
Yes, I would imagine there'll be a lot of stories about that at this conference as well.
So, you know, Apple plays it so close to the vest. They never have any presence at these events. They always just do their own thing at their own events. So you're right. There's probably a lot of buzz about it, and a lot of the developers are already working on things. They have gag orders. They can't talk about it. I don't see any sessions about the Apple, but I'm sure there'll be plenty of
consultants. They're not officially announcing it for a while.
There'll be consultants that are on panels that'll be talking about the technology in a more general sense without giving away what Apple's doing. I've been reviewing a lot of the real deep dive into the leaks and what's going on with Apple. And it's exciting to have another big league player jumping into the field. I mean, Facebook has spent a fortune on virtual reality. They're working on augmented reality.
Yes.
I guess it's important to make a distinction for the listeners out there that augmented reality is a little bit more of an accessible technology for everyday usage by regular people and not part of a business enterprise specifically. It's like a pair of glasses that you wear, and they provide you with information as you move about your space and where you live in your area or about a city, giving you cues as to what's around you or what you're interested in or meetings that you have or places you need to go. Nowadays, with the lockdown, augmented reality allows people to access a lot more information and without having to touch anything, just by putting their hand in front of their face and making gestures, so they can access information and change panels and screens and the reference material just by using their thumbs and their fingers and making various gestures and commands with their hands.
Yeah.
That's going to be a big part of the Apple device, by the way.
Yeah, to gesture languaging. Yeah, makes sense. Mm-hmm. Is there a special place there where you can experience the latest and greatest in virtual reality, like an amusement park of some sort where you can try demos and things?
Well, you know, at the main conference, they used to have all that physical access.
Right.
All the virtual reality conferences and augmented reality conferences where people would touch anything or put anything on their head.
Yeah.
That's all ancient history right at the moment. We're pretty far away from going back in the direction we went in. The interesting part of that story is that if you try to buy a virtual reality visor, an Oculus Rift or an Oculus Quest or HTC Vive or the three big ones, you can buy them. They're all on back order. The prices have all gone up. Anybody selling one used is putting $200-$300 on the price that they paid for it.
Wow.
So they become a scarce item. And not that people are using them that much for these kinds of conferences. Most people are using regular 2D screens on their computer, and they're using Zoom or FaceTime or Google Duo or Facebook Messenger Rooms now to do all of these various meetings and have these panels and sessions with different people and different portions of the screen.
Yeah, I use mine mostly for riding my exercise bicycle. Because the virtual worlds allow me to ride on any road on the Google Earth. You know, I can just go there and explore the world that way just by riding virtually. But I actually am at a real exercise bicycle, so I get some real exercise in the process.
Right.
It's pretty cool.
And in the past, the only reason why somebody would want to share your visor is just because it's all sweaty and wet.
Well, it's more like glasses, right? Everyone has their own glasses.
Now they won't touch it, even if it looks like it hasn't even been taken out of the box.
Yeah.
So, you know, I still always talk about the bowling ball philosophy of VR.
Yeah.
And people say, well, what's that? I said, well, you go bowling, you have a bowling ball bag, and you have your custom bowling ball, and you bring your bowling ball bag and your ball to the alley, and you use your own bowling ball. You don't have to touch anyone else's. You put it back in your bag and you go home. So I think that's what's going to happen with these wearable devices.
Yeah, it's going to be personal.
Yeah, you're going to spend the money. You're going to buy one that's going to be yours. I know mine. I have prescription lenses in mine, so it doesn't suit other people to try mine on.
But I tell you, when I used to play with Google Glass, like I guess it was like 5 years ago now,
right?
More than that. Everyone wanted to try it all the time. Everyone wanted to try it out.
Yeah. So a lot of people haven't tried VR, and when they do try it, depending on how well curated the experience is, so if someone's an architect, you show them an architectural experience of walking through a building, you know, then they are impressed. And everyone has their particular thing that they've dreamed of or they would imagine they would do or the coolest thing they think they could do in VR. And if you can just interview them a little bit and find out what it is that's special about them and make a determination of what to show them first, like you and I have put different people through VR, and we love to do the ocean whale. You're underwater and the giant whale comes by you, or
he looks at you. I swear he saw me.
Yeah, everybody loves that universally. You don't even have to guess what somebody wants to do in VR.
Yes.
To show them that one, and then they're sold right away.
Yes.
And there's so many of those that you just go eeny, meeny, miny, moe and throw a dart at them, and they would have a VR experience that would really sell
them. I was thinking about it. Like one of our stories today was about the simulations of the asteroid that created the mass planetary extinctions for the dinosaurs.
Right.
Now, with VR, you actually could be there and experience the whole process and step it through and walk around and look at how the earth is being shifted by it. So, now what is the expo playground? There's something in the stuff here. It says Awe Playground. Do you know anything about that?
I don't know. They've tried to take the actual conference the way it was organized.
Showcasing cutting-edge augmented virtual reality technologies.
Yeah.
Think of it as a theme park, they say.
Yeah, I haven't looked at them all yet. There's so much to discover, which is really great. I imagine that the playground is just a series of videos that the vendors that have new products and exciting emerging projects have taken video of them and then given them to the organizers, and they aggregate them onto a page where you can look at the videos rather than actually deal with anything in specific that would be a physical thing.
Right. Okay.
I'm looking at a session that's coming up later, the evolution of virtual human agents in clinical healthcare applications. So, you know, doctors and doctor visits and all these different ways of people interacting with real people in the real world using all these various technologies.
Okay, listen, we've got 45 seconds left.
Okay.
Yeah, so can you, it's AWEXR.com, Augmented World.
Yeah,
and you said you have a special pass for our listeners?
Yeah, so yeah, special gift for the listeners, $200 off.
Whoa.
So for you, it's free. And the code is Dr. Future 2020. That's DRFUTURE 2020. Dr. Future 2020. No period after the doctor. DRFUTURE 2020. So yeah, That'll give you access to all those panels for the next couple of days.
Fantastic.
Thanks
wow.
so much, Greg.
That's great, Greg.
Enjoy yourself, Dr. Future Techies. Listen to the show today. You won out.
All right. Yeah. See, aren't we glad we didn't just talk about viruses? Now we got free access to Augmented World Expo. Wow.
Looking forward to it.
We'll mix it up.
Hey, all right. Well, look forward
Greg
to seeing
Cass.
You there, Greg.
Thanks so much.
See you virtually.
Have a great time at AWE.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. Bobby, I wanted to talk to you about some of the latest news on the virus in terms of how it's being treated. Like there, I heard there's a kind of like the equivalent of a Manhattan Project to deal with six different vaccines up in Washington State that's been in the news. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah. So what's usually taken 10 years in development, they've done it. They're trying to do this in a few months. And so we heard about Moderna coming out with the first trials, but then they're saying Oxford University and also
AstraZeneca. With the Oxford vaccine project.
Yeah. And they'll probably come out next with a vaccine. Mm. There's definitely a rush here. What I was interested in was, I'm not really excited about getting the first vaccine in my arm. You know, I'd rather see other people get it and see how it turns out.
Yeah, just give me the antibodies.
Exactly. But I watched that Nova series, and they were talking about these researchers from the CDC that had been working on Ebola, and they were in a level 4 lab, and, you know, and they're in those spacesuits, and his idea, Dan Burok, is to actually take the spikes that are on the coronavirus and put them on a cold virus. And that way you could build up antibodies in your body that would recognize those spikes that are normally on the coronavirus, but now they're on a cold virus. And I thought, well, that might be okay. I would rather catch that cold and get over that cold than catching the coronavirus.
Which sounds considerably nastier.
Yeah. But then I thought about that for a while, and I thought, well, okay, if this cold virus, what it's doing, the bad thing about the coronavirus is that it's those spikes that interfere with your immune system. Well, now we have another virus that actually causes these thrombosis and causes death, but it's through a different vector. And I thought, well, okay, so I have to rethink this. And I thought, well, the best thing would be if we just took some portions and built certain antibodies to those spikes, and hopefully that would build up your immune system against it. and make sure that that cold virus doesn't build up characteristics of the original coronavirus spikes, you know. So that's what I'm hoping for. It's just going to take some time.
Yeah, so it's still in the early phases of coming up with a successful vaccine on this.
But in the future, what I think would be is that instead of passing around the world and getting herd immunity to the coronavirus, the COVID virus, we'll have immunity gathered by sharing a cold.
Which would be a lot simpler.
Yes, that would be a lot simpler.
Yeah, so that's, like that. So cold could be a way in which it could defang this virus.
Yes.
Well, immunity is all about exposure. You got to be exposed one way or another.
Exposed to something less so that you can deal with something more. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Now, you recommend this PBS documentary, this NOVA on decoding COVID? Would you say that's a good documentary? Okay, because I have a link for it up on the website now.
Yeah, we watched that, and I thought it was very informative. Very interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty up to date. It shows some really interesting research. Also, if you're into 3D modeling,
there's some good 3D models in that documentary to really see how it all actually works. It's really like that.
Maybe you should put up the link to the Raju Das. He's at Stanford, and he's gamified. What they want to do is, this is the deal. If we do get antibodies that are out there, the problem is these antibodies are very unstable. And by the time they were shipped across the United States, they would be not as effective anymore. And so what he's doing at Stanford is creating a model. You can play this game. It's like a puzzle game. And you can see the structure of the spikes. And he wants to actually... and these models of antibodies, and he wants them to curl up into a ball so they would be stable at room temperature. Right now, you know, they have to freeze it very cold, and even then it deteriorates.
Hmm. Okay.
What about this for an idea? I mean, I know that that's what they're doing because, of course, the vaccine businesses all want to be the one that you buy the vaccine from. So, of course, it has to be stable when they ship it. But what about a kit where you can biohack your own vaccine and they just send you the prefabrication ingredients and you mix it yourself like a cocktail?
I think that's a great idea because all we have to do is there are labs all over the world that have synthetically engineered those spikes. And that's all we need. We have to get those spikes into our immune system.
Send us your spikes and we'll self-vaccinate.
Could this be a...
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
That'll really turn the radicals on their heels.
Could this be a home business?
Yeah.
This is our science moment. This horse race, I hear, has got over 100 different teams.
Laboratories.
Yeah. Laboratories.
I think 100 laboratories. 121
laboratories, all working. This is unprecedented, unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, people know much more about the human genome than they've ever known in history, and there's a lot of people in business to capitalize on that knowledge.
Boy.
But I am longing for a way of returning the power of your health to the individual. I do not approve of systems where we have to rely on experts. Our health is our own personal domain and dominion, and we should be empowered to make choices for ourselves, not give up our choices so that some expert can take their best guess.
Mm.
What I notice is WHO, the World Health Organization, has stopped trials of hydroxychloroquine. Mm-hmm. And based on the Lancet report, and it turns out the Lancet didn't use zinc, and most of those people were at the edge of death, and they were in the ICUs, and they were on the ventilators, and then they decided to give them the hydroxychloroquine.
Well, it's obvious spin control that this is, we're in a place in time where your facts are according to whichever story you can tell. And if you omit crucial details like use the zinc ionophore with the hydroxychloroquine, then of course you can make it sound like it's a killer drug.
So obviously it looks like the people that we hear...
Yeah, okay, we got a caller back? Okay, good.
Yeah. Most of this information we're getting from experts are people that have financial interest in getting their vaccine on the market because they're going to make money out of it.
Yeah, so I think there should be some kind of fact check that goes automatically with an article and figures out who's making money on that article. Like on that set of facts, who are the people who are poised to make money if you believe it? Right? Wouldn't that be a nice thing for the AIs to do, is point out who's going to get rich if you believe this story?
Yeah.
You want to get rich? Exactly. Believe the story.
That's informed consent. Would you like to give a little preview to our guests for the next hour? They're on the line.
On the second hour, we have a couple of guests coming in. Should we say hi to them? Well, if they're both on. One of them's on.
We have David and Howard on one line.
On
so
one
far.
Line? Okay. Well, they must be hanging out together.
David, Howard, how are you?
You guys, are you there?
Hey, great to be here. Yes, we're both here.
All right.
You sound great.
Fantastic. Good. I'm going to bring you on after the break on the top of the hour. We'll do
you
a
might
proper
want to
introduction.
Just
Okay, okay, well, Mrs. Futures, decide to introduce you a little bit beforehand. You want to say
something? Well, I just feel like it's good for our audience to know who's coming up in the next hour. So tell them a little bit about your organizations, and then we'll get into it in the next hour.
Okay, we got about a minute.
Yeah, well, I'll just tell you that this. First of all, this is Howard, and I write under the nom de plume of Etienne de la Boissie Squared.
Yeah.
And I'd like to come on as that, as under my nom de plume, which is how most people know me. And also, we've got Ellie Black with us, who is the third co-founder of the Committee to Reopen Santa Cruz to Save Lives. And if it was okay with you, we kind of wanted to split it up, where Ellie would talk about the Committee to Reopen Santa Cruz, I would talk about my book, Government, the Biggest Scam in History Exposed, and David would kind of talk about Santa Cruz voluntarists.
All right, so there you have
good.
It, folks.
Okay, sounds like
and
you guys are familiar
are
with how to play together.
We're at the end of the first hour, so we'll be back after some traffic, news, weather, with the second hour of the Dr. Future Show here on KSCO Santa Cruz.
All right, and thank you, Bobby, for a little scientific update on the vaccine world. Appreciate it. And we'll be seeing you all, folks, after the top of the hour of the news.